Voilà. So this morning we'll return to the practice, as we'll do, I think, for a number of more days in the morning, to this mindfulness of breathing practice as taught by a Sangha. But I'd like to finesse it just a little bit, just a couple of minutes. And that is to highlight the point that will turn out to be very significant over the long term, including during this retreat. It's the theme of stillness and movement, that comes up repeatedly in the Mahamudra, Dzogchen traditions, and in a very deep way. And so it's the notion, very simply put, of the simultaneous awareness of the stillness of your awareness and the movements of everything else. Now, in the context of settling the mind in its natural state, when you're observing thoughts and so forth, thoughts, images, memories, desires and emotions come and go. It's all motion, right? But in the midst of that motion, insofar as you can release what is called cognitive fusion, that is the identification with these mental events, then in that release of grasping or identification with, your awareness remains still while thoughts and so forth come and go, right? Well, this has the ramifications or the reflections of this continue from the very beginning of the path, throughout the path, and to the culmination of the path. But let's just contrast two visions of what enlightenment is. The Shravakayana vision is that one becomes an arhat, and then you're out of samsara and you never look back. You're gone. And so your awareness, that is nirvana itself, is devoid of motion. Of course, it's unconditioned, unborn, unceasing, so there's no motion in nirvana. Your awareness of nirvana, and there are some Theravadins who believe that, you know, the death of an arhat implies annihilation. I think it's fundamentally a false view. But then what does linger is never explained by the Buddha in the Pali Canon. So it's open. It's explained quite clearly in the Mahayana. But whatever it is, if the arhat after death is still experiencing nirvana, and it would be extremely peculiar if he or she or it is not, then the awareness of nirvana is also still. You wouldn't be having excitation as a dead arhat experiencing nirvana. Not going to happen. And so it's stillness meets stillness. There's a complete symmetry there. Stillness of your awareness, absolute timeless stillness of your awareness, and absolute timeless stillness. That is, it's not moving and then it stopped. The timeless stillness of nirvana. There's a complete symmetry there. But of course, and that means, of course, you've turned your back entirely, frankly, on all sentient beings. You know, send them a good luck note before you leave. But, you know, you're gone. Then in contrast to us samsaric beings, like me, it's motion meets motion. Movement meets movement. As we're engaging with the people around us, we engage with our thoughts, our physical sensations, everything around us is in motion, right? And our awareness is in motion. In fact, one of the synonyms for sentient being in Tibetan, sentient being sentient, a synonym is doa. Doa, it's a term is used synonymously, and doa means to go. We are goers. We are get-up-and-goers. We never stop going. And where are we going, and why are we going? Because we don't want to be here. Why else would you go? Unless somebody kicked you in the pants, then you're going because somebody kicked you in the pants. But when we deliberately go, it's because we don't want to be where we are, and we think someplace else will be better. And we're all running around samsara looking for that someplace that's better. It's kind of like a crazy anthill. Like all these worker bees getting all these things done and moving around trying to find happiness, and it's just over the horizon. That horizon, actually. Right over there. That's where. Let's all go that way. I think it's probably better there. We're in motion. We're in motion because it's like those poor greyhounds in a greyhound race. They're all running around the circle chasing an iron bunny. Imagine what it tastes like. I mean, if they got it, they finally clump their jaws down on that little iron bunny. I think that would be disappointing. At least you'd want a nice, juicy, fat, tasty bunny. But they're chasing an iron bunny, which frankly doesn't make any sense. Maybe that's why they have small heads. If they had bigger heads, they would know that it makes no sense to run after an iron bunny. Really, you know. But there we are. We're running around like, you know, round and around in circles chasing an iron bunny, and we're always in motion. And so it's motion meets motion. Our minds are in motion, filled with desires and anxieties, hopes, fears, etc., etc. Don't need to tell you. You have a ringside seat to the chaos of your own minds. And so it's motion meets motion. There's a complete symmetry there as well. Right? I wasn't implying that my mind's any better. Don't think I put myself on a pedestal. That's why I'm chosen such a low seat here, you know. There's no sense of hierarchy here at all. But then we have the enlightenment of a Buddha. And it's me in Tibetan, mi nepe nyangde. It's non-abiding nirvana. Because the Buddha is not a sentient being, scurrying after this, going after that, in delusion and in suffering. Buddha is not. It's forever free of samsara. But the Buddha is also not immersed in nirvana. So neither immersed in samsara, nor immersed in nirvana. So not abiding in either. But now, like the moon casting its reflection in myriad pools of water, without any effort at all, but each of those reflections illuminates, right? Each of those, you look at it, and it's illuminating. Every pool. And you can have 1,000 pools or 1,000,000,000,000 pools, and the moon's up for it. It never says, I've had it, no more reflections, you know, I'm beat. Sorry, you know, it's just been too much. And it's been a long day. You know, all the reflections just keep on coming spontaneously, effortlessly, and each one illuminates. So it's said in the same way the Buddha manifests, from Dharmakaya to Sambhogakaya to Nimanakaya. And so the Dharmakaya is always still. Sambhogakaya manifesting to Arya Bodhisattvas and so on. And then the Nimanakaya is manifesting in myriad ways. Motion, motion, motion. But simultaneously resting in Dharmakaya and manifesting in motion. Simultaneously resting in Nirvana, fully aware of Nirvana, and aware of the myriad activities and movements of samsara. Simultaneously and non-dually. That's the part that's inconceivable. But there it is. So we're seeking to emulate the fruition from the very beginning of the path, which happens a lot. Okay? So on that note, please find a comfortable posture. And we will literally jump in. This practice may be the kindest thing you can do for yourself right now. So in the spirit of loving kindness, with this motivation, let your awareness descend from the head, if you feel you're located up there, right down to the ground. Releasing thoughts, resting in this pure witnessing mode, simply being present with the tactile sensations. The sensations of the earth element where your body is in contact with the ground, the cushion, the chair. Settle your body with the qualities of relaxation, stillness, and ease, and vigilance. Settle your respiration, effortlessly flowing in and flowing out. And in the spirit of renunciation, release all mundane concerns, at least for the time being, pertaining to the future, the past, and even the present. Give your mind a rest. Release all the activities and let your awareness come to rest in stillness, in the present moment, naturally bright and clear. Now let the light of your awareness illuminate the entire space of the body. Illuminate the fluctuations of energy, the various tactile sensations arising within this somatic field, and specifically focus your attention selectively on those fluctuations, those sensations that correspond to the in and out breath. It's as if you were emanating your awareness into the space of the body, clearly aware of the sensations arising within this field, but at the same time, sustain the stillness of your awareness, the awareness resting in its own place, holding its own ground, knowing itself, knowing its own stillness. Be aware of the stillness of your awareness and the movements of these fluctuations corresponding to the respiration throughout the entire field of the body. To the best of your ability, let your attention be single-pointed. The point here, of course, is not a point, but a field. The entire somatic field, and specifically within that field, those sensations corresponding to the in and out breath. So whatever thoughts, images, mental events come to mind, don't deliberately give any attention to them. Let them slip on by. Let your awareness be unmoving. Without moving your awareness, you may adopt the method taught by Padmasambhava, this oscillation, such that during the in-breath you arouse, you intensify, you concentrate your awareness, like turning up the voltage, really focusing, non-conceptually. And then as the breath flows out, you relax, you release. But all the while, throughout the entire cycle, sustain a flow of mindfulness, continuously attentive. With each in-breath and out-breath, note whether it is long or short. And let's continue practicing now in silence. Oh, lasso. So as I mentioned yesterday, let's see the extent to which we can maintain the continuity of this practice. Tsongkhapa is one of the great, many great masters who points out, specifically with respect to shamatha, that if you really would like to progress along those nine stages and eventually achieve shamatha, then one of the keys to success is the continuity of practice, and that is to say not only that you're continuously engaged while you're on the cushion, but in between sessions. You don't just drop it and do something else, that is completely disengage and do something else for a while and say, okay, now back to this. But you try to maintain it. And he's talking about, that is, the method that he highlights is focusing on an image of the Buddha. So he's suggesting if you're living in a shamatha retreat, then even between sessions, you still peripherally maintain some aware of the image of the Buddha as you're walking about and so on. So not so easy if you have to do anything complicated. But here, for this practice, it's natural. And that is, the object of meditation is being presented to you free all the time. You don't have to generate anything, right? As long as you're breathing. When you stop breathing, then this lesson's over. But as long as the breathing is happening, then just breath by breath, and throughout the in-course, the inhalation, the exhalation, the breath is always presenting itself to you, potentially inviting you, basically, to attend to it, you know. And so in between sessions, I really would strongly encourage you to do something very pleasant, soothing, calming, grounding. And that is just let your awareness be in the body in between sessions. And in the midst of that, your awareness grounded in the body, which is the opposite of having it up in the head and then wandering all over the place in rumination. Grounding in the present moment, grounding the body, and being aware of the flow of the breath, but then also very deliberately, as it's important to develop good habits of sleep, and it's important to drink the appropriate liquids in the appropriate amount, and of course proper diet of the type of food, amount of food, all of these very, very important. So there are four types of nourishment we need on a regular basis. Food, drink, sleep, and air. And we can have, and many people do have, very unhealthy breathing habits, just like other people have bad eating habits, right? Or they're drinking too much, or the wrong kind of substances, and so forth. Or they just have really bad sleeping habits, so they're chronically sleep deprived. So we can do all of these poorly, and we suffer as a result. But this is one that's often overlooked. Sleeping, oh, it's in the press all the time. Eating and drinking, sure. But bad breathing habits, how often do you read about that in the press? You know, but it's just as important. So back in my mother's era, like 1950s, I think women back then were told to tuck in your tummies, you know, tuck in your tummies. Why not just bind your feet while you're at it? You know, it's really a terrible habit because you want your belly to be nice and loose and soft. And so when you're breathing in, your belly expands. And take that, guys, my belly's expanding. You can like that or lump it. Yeah, really. So this is true for anybody, children, men, women, young, old, that the healthy breathing is letting the whole body relax and the belly naturally expands. In a deeper breath, the diaphragm then expands. A deeper breath, the chest expands. Finally, like filling a vase with water from the bottom up, right? But it's not only that the flow of the breath is unimpeded, but also the manner of the breath. And as we don't try to take over, go into manual override in helping the liver purify the blood, we don't do that. It's a good idea. It's doing a good job all by itself. And so other internal organs do perfectly well without our trying to get in there and tinker with them. Likewise, I would say that the body does the best job of breathing much better than we know how. But that means we have to get out of the way. Don't mess with it. Don't inhibit it. But let it flow unimpededly. So here we have so little to do. You know, it's really wonderful. And so throughout the course of the day, many times, season the day heavily with moments of just really seeing that breathing is flowing unimpededly, effortlessly, and that will serve you very well. So that's it. Enjoy your day. I'll see you all at 4:30 today.